abuse, positional school abusers are admonished from here and give their attention. So the court is now sitting. Got taken out of state and is on the report. Be seated, please. Case number 07-5179. American Wildland et al. Illinois. Clearwater Biodiversity Project versus Dirk Pipthorn, Secretary, U.S. Department of the Interior et al. Ms. Dillon, for the appellant, Mr. McFadden, for the appellate.
May it please the court, my name is Abigail Dillon. I represent appellants in this case, and with the court's permission, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. On the threshold issue of standing, our briefing is submitted. However, I do want to emphasize that the conservation groups I represent have demonstrated a very particular interest in the West Slope
Country. Counsel, my problem is not with interest, it's with injury. What is it that the act under litigation here of not listing the Western Slope Cutthroat Trout, what is it that act has done that injured your client's interest and is remediable in this action?
Your Honor, the record is clear that this is a species that has suffered declines and is continuing to suffer.
No question about that. What is it that has been done by the failure to list it that has injured your client's interest? As expressed in the affidavits.
The decision not to afford the species protections under the Endangered Species Act interests my clients, injures their interests in conserving this species. The Supreme Court and the law of the circuit.
An interest in conserving is not going to get you there. A general political interest or philosophical interest is not a basis for standing.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You've got a client that says he likes to fish and he likes to look at fish. And it's not at all clear to me what it is that has occurred in the failure to list that hurts the fishing interest, because it would seem there, if it goes endangered, he can't fish for it, can
he? Well, the first...
That's helped him, not hurt him, when they didn't list in that interest.
Excuse me, if I understand your question, Your Honor, I believe that the interest in fishing and observing is clearly injured by declines in the species that make the species less abundant.
Well, and if it makes it to the endangered species list, there's two separate interests. Fishing and observing, I think, are two separate interests. The first one, the fishing interest, I don't see how it remotely harms that interest to not list it, because if it were endangered, he couldn't take it under the law, right?
Your Honor, perhaps I can clear up some confusion on this issue. The petition specifically asked that this fish be listed as threatened, and a threatened species certainly can be fished for. It's up to the discretion of the Fish and Wildlife Service to set regulations.
Nonetheless, I'm left with the question, how has his interest in fishing for that fish been hurt by not listing?
His interest has been injured because there are less fish to fish for, because the species is declining.
How many fish less were there the day after it wasn't listed than there were the day before it wasn't listed?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that anyone could answer that question.
I don't either. So isn't that a speculative harm at best?
I don't think so.
Speculative harms won't give standing.
Well, the law of the circuit is clear that in situations where a species is threatened by hunting or other concrete threats, the plaintiffs have not been required to show that on the particular day.
If the law of this circuit is clear, is there a case where we've held failure to list to be a sufficient harm to somebody to give them standing?
Yes, there are analogous cases.
No, not analogous. Or is there a case where we have held a failure to list to be a sufficient harm to give standing to somebody?
Your Honor, I don't know that standing has been questioned in the run-of-the-mill cases
where... In other words, the law of this circuit is not clear, right?
Well, in an analogous statute of the Migratory Bird Treaty Protection Act, the MBTA, this court in Hill v. Norton did find that the failure to list the species under the treaty did give rise to an injury to plaintiffs who had an interest in the species. The ESA is analogous.
Protecting them from actual hunting, right? And the interest was in observational interest. So you don't have anything that compares with the fishing interest you have here in any of the cases.
Well, we do
have... Observational, you may be closer. even there, I'm not sure that I see how the failure to list as an endangered species is analogous to the failure to protect from hunters.
The failure to...
Threatened species. I'm sorry, you corrected me on that. It makes it even less so once you make it threatened rather than endangered.
Well, Your Honor, the record does establish here that there are many threats facing the species, and all of them are resulting in declines in the species.
It seems to be mostly a threat from
hybridization.
Other fish, right?
That's the threat that we've highlighted in this action, Your Honor. And on page 8 of our standing brief that's submitted, we have provided the court with citations in the record showing that hybridization alone has led to declines.
Yeah, hybridization, that's the main thing that you do show, is that hybridization is leading to decline today, right?
Excuse me?
The main thing you show as a current threat is hybridization, right?
That is the threat that we believe that the agency has dealt with arbitrarily, although there are several other acknowledged threats to the species, chief among them habitat destruction, which is certainly set forth in the affidavits before you as well.
Yeah, I think we, unless my colleagues have further questions on standing, I will let you move to the, we'll let you move to the merits now.
Thank you, Your Honor. On the merits, the job that the Fish and Wildlife Service had in this case was to respond to a court order and take a look at widespread hybridization throughout the range of the West Slope cutthroat trout and determine whether this is a threat that warrants listing. What the agency concluded was that, yes, hybridization is the number one threat to the species, but that listing is not warranted because there are sufficient numbers of fish where you're not seeing the impacts of hybridization manifest itself physically. And this determination rested on a key assumption, that any fish that looks like a West Slope cutthroat trout is going to be no more than 20% hybridized.
In the actual threat assessment that was done by the agency, are you attacking that finding as well, or are you attacking the policy that describes how they're going to do these things?
Both, Your Honor. We're attacking the policy because we believe that it fundamentally impacted the threats analysis.
Well, the way the government describes the actual threat assessment is that they had genetic data, and whenever there was more than 20% introgression, they didn't count that. Isn't that right?
That's what the government says, but that's not what the record reflects. The finding itself says the genetic data will be used to define when a species is a West Slope cutthroat West Slope cutthroat trout population, and therefore
I would just
not
call it a WCT.
A WCT, okay. Only when no
what,
other data is available.
I believe I'm going to be asking the government about what they meant by that, since their brief seems to give a completely different reading than you are attaching to it.
Okay.
But with respect to what they actually did in this case, it appears that they looked at genetic data, and where they had genetic data that showed more than 20%, they didn't count it. Is that wrong?
I think it is wrong, and I would direct the court to the appendix at pages 972, which is cited in our reply, but also pages 966 and 1040.
Let me just hold on. Is this from the finding?
This is from the status review that the states put together, and as the finding makes clear, that multi-state status review was the basis for the threats
page?
Assessment.
What page?
Appendix pages 966, I think, is particularly clear.
Say again, please.
Volume 4, 966.
966.
Yes. I'll just follow along with you if I may.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, so this shows the breakdown of the genetic status of the West Slope cutthroat trout populations that were identified in the status review.
Yeah.
And as you can see, there's a category fourth down that says genetically tested greater than 25% introgressed.
Yep.
And there are 919.7 stream miles there.
Right.
Those fish were
I understand. But with respect to all the other stream miles, which is seemed to me that that's what they were relying on, they didn't look at anything that was higher, right?
Well, Your Honor, the only ones that have been tested to be higher than 25% were considered West Slope cutthroat trout and part of the listable entity, and that's that 900 miles. The other miles on the three categories above have been tested roughly below 20%, but then, as you'll see, you have large categories of fish where the genetic status is unknown.
Right, but the agency doesn't have, you agree from our cases that the agency doesn't have to do the testing itself. It only has to look at whatever tests are out there.
Right? That's certainly correct.
Do you know whether there are any tests out there with respect to these others?
I have no reason to believe that this is not a comprehensive status review, no. But this brings us back to the fundamental point that in the absence of definite information, the agency does need to take account of the best available science. Here, it's making an assumption that all these populations that it doesn't know the genetic status are going to be less than 20% based on looks.
What assumption do you want it to make when there is no data? I understand the argument that where they have both morphology and genetics, and they seem inconsistent with each other, you prefer genetics. I understand that, and we'll ask the government about that. But in the circumstance where they only have morphology, they have nothing else, and in light of our cases, at least two of which have held, the agency doesn't have an obligation to do its own tests. And in light of the fact that you agree, you have no reason to doubt that there are any tests out there, what do you want the agency to do with respect to the situations where it has only morphology?
Well, if the agency is going to say that hybridization isn't a threat in all of these populations because looks are a surrogate for low levels of hybridization.
Now you're talking about the policy question. I appreciate the importance of it, but I want to know how it relates to the threat assessment in this case. What would you have wanted them to do? What did you ask them to do with respect to those populations where there was only morphological evidence?
Well, what we would like them to do is to take a conservative approach. If they don't know what the genetic status is, then we don't want them to assume without any basis that these fish are only slightly hybridized. And particularly when the scientific data that the Fish and Wildlife Service agrees with is showing us that you're not going to see hybridization visibly until it reaches about 50%. We don't want to make the assumption that these fish aren't hybridized.
What did you want them to do? You said in your briefs that you did not want them to exclude it altogether, right? You said in your briefs that if it's slightly introgressed, you don't want them to exclude it, right?
I think there are two separate questions between what species you include in a listing and how you assess the threat. If you have millions of fish out there, but all of them are sick, you're going to worry that maybe they should be listed.
Right, but I'm asking you, what do you want to do with respect to the population that morphologically looks like WCT, but as to which there is no evidence genetically?
Well, I think the most reasoned approach is one that the Fish and Wildlife Service itself has developed, and that is in assessing how the species is going to do into the foreseeable future, you look at the genetically pure populations, you look at all the threats facing those, and you decide whether those populations enough would be able to sustain the species in the future. Now, if you decided listing was appropriate based on that analysis, it wouldn't mean that you were not going to protect other West Slope cutthroat trout. It would just mean that those particular populations would be a priority for you.
So you mean then that if just happened that no geneticists had studied a particular population at all, which I'm sure is probably true for some populations, all those have to be regarded as threatened because we have no data to say that they're not?
Your Honor, I think that part of the confusion, I think part of the confusion in this case is that the population of West Slope cutthroat trout, what is a West Slope cutthroat trout, that question is being conflated with whether the species as a whole is threatened.
It's not being conflated in my question. I appreciate it that the two briefs look to me to be I don't know how to describe this, but they're not running parallel to each other. You're making one argument, they're making another argument, you say their argument isn't your argument, they say their argument isn't your argument, and this is the first set of briefs I've ever seen where I actually can't tell who's opposing who and on what ground. So I'm trying to reformulate the question. For purposes of the threat assessment, do you want them to not count at all WCT populations that look like, from a morphological point of view, WCT, but for which there is no genetic data? Is that what you're asking?
Well, for purposes of the threat posed by hybridization,
yes.
Evaluating that,
that's the threat you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Yes, and, for that
and,
threat.
And so, I, and I'm trying to make sure I understand your
for
question.
For that threat, let's start imagine that there was no genetic data at all.
Yes.
All you had was a population, all of which look morphologically like WCT. Would you say that that population is threatened because we don't know whether there's genetic introgression?
No, I would not, because in that case, we wouldn't have any basis for understanding that hybridization was a threat. But here...
What if if you do have evidence of genetic integration with respect to some small amount of this, and you just don't have any data with respect to the rest of the population?
Well, here, when we do have a historic understanding that whenever we test populations, basically we're finding out that about 50% of them are hybridized. So
hybridized, by which you mean more than 50%?
No, I mean that they have interbred with a foreign species and they have
but
a genetic material.
But you agreed that a small amount, I'm not going to define small, but I guess I am going to define small, smaller than 20%, is not a problem, right?
We do not agree with that, Your Honor.
You don't agree with that?
No, we believe that the HIT data shows that populations which are in the 20% range are behaving differently than West Lakota.
What about 5%? What about 5%? Just take Judge Garland's question and substitute 5%.
Your Honor, we do not foreclose the possibility that there may be some level of introgression that's benign. We haven't seen the science to justify that. And in the absence of that science, all we can go by is what the conservation biologists and the agency is saying, which
the
is...
The science on that is disputed, right?
Yeah.
It's very much in dispute.
Well, there's no dispute that hybridization poses a threat, and that's...
At some level, right? But at the level, it's very much a controversy. And how are we to decide that?
Well, the agency in this listing determination was the first to suggest that hybridization at low levels is benign. We haven't seen the science to support that proposition, Your Honor. In this listing determination, the Fish and Wildlife Service is essentially taking a guess. Certainly the agency has discretion, but what we're getting at is there's something internally inconsistent with the approach the agency's taking. It can't make the assumption that's critical here that 20% hybridization is as far as these populations are going to get when the evidence shows that they may well be 50%. And that's our claim, and I may reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, please.
No further questions, then. We will hear again from you on rebuttal. Hear from the respondent, the appellee. Feels like a respondent case, appellee this time.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Lane McFadden for the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. These questions of taxonomy and ecology science are really sort of the archetypal types of questions which are delegated to the expert scientific judgment of the agency, and the types of things this court has always held that it will uphold as long as there is some rational basis in the administrative record to defend the agency's decision. And certainly that is the case here. I want to start out by explaining what the threat of hybridization as discussed in the finding, actually is. Because American Wildlands presents this as a matter of any genetic introgression is threatening because more genetic introgression is always bad. And
let me interrupt just. This looks like exactly the problem of the briefs. You're going to say this, and they're going to say that that's not what they're arguing at all. So let me see if I can refine the question a little bit further. If the morphology of the fish looks like a WCT, but the genetic data shows that more than 20% is not WCT. Do you count that for purposes of a threat assessment as WCT?
That particular situation never actually arose during the status review.
Okay, so let's hold on that for just one second.
Okay.
Is the policy of the agency to count that, or are you saying that we'll decide that question later?
The policy of the agency is to consider that genetic data along with the morphological data, which is why it's important that it never actually happened, because they don't know what the result of that would be.
So if you had a situation where the morphology made it look like it would reach a conclusion that it's WCT, but the genetic data was more than 20% non-WCT, you would not count that as, or you would take both, you would at least take that into consideration.
We would certainly take it into consideration.
And you might well not count that as WCT.
That's right. In fact, that's the most likely conclusion.
Okay. So that is, you can understand why your opponent might be confused about the wording of the finding on that ground, because the wording of the finding of that ground, first of all, sometimes uses the word presumed. Now, I understand presumed could be subject to rebuttal by genetic evidence. But what they've focused on is this language at 46995 of the Federal Register that says, for populations for which molecular genetic data may be the only data, populations with less than 20% will be considered WCT under the Act. Now, they have interpreted the words may be the only as be the only. That is, where the only data is genetic, you won't, and it shows less than 20%, you won't count them as WCT. But more than, you know what I mean.
Yes,
more
I
than,
do. Yes.
Depends on which way you put it.
Right.
We'll call it the 20% rule.
Okay.
But where there is both, she is reading that. It's not an unreasonable reading, but she's reading that as saying that you're going to ignore the genetic data. I take it from your briefs that is not how the government interprets its own regulations. Is
that's
that right?
Right.
Okay.
It's written inclusively in the finding, which can be confusing about what happens to fish that are 21% or more. But what happens is they're not Westlake cutthroat trout.
I'll talk about that in one second. But I just you have two briefs that argue as if you are in different courtrooms. And I'd like to put us all in one courtroom just
please,
for the purpose of this argument.
Although I'm not sure that is rare.
Maybe it's not. All right. So we've settled that if you have genetic data as well as morphology, you will not ignore the genetic data.
Correct.
Okay. Now, do you agree that if the... Are you... When you say you presume that morphology, that something that looks morphologically like a WCT is one, does that mean you think that the agency thinks that it is automatically less than 20%, or do you acknowledge the possibility that it could be as much as 49%?
We acknowledge that possibility, although at 49% it seems pretty clear you would know, but it could be 30% or mm-hmm. even maybe 40%. But that's where the two ships of the briefs have passed in the night. Because what the taxonomic question is to look at a specimen or a population and simply ask, is this or is this not a Westlake cutthroat trout? And where you don't have genetic data for those populations, which is true for some of the populations, although many of them we did have genetic data, then you conduct the traditional scientific inquiry and you look at all of the morphological definitions. You also look at where it lives, what its behaviors are, what its life history is. There are a number of factors. And if it looks and swims and appears by all scientific means to be a Westlake cutthroat trout, it is a Westlake cutthroat trout, by definition.
What if you had, and I assume you do not have this, but I think it's implicit in your opponent's answer to one of my questions. What if you had sort of randomized data that suggests that in most of the populations you have that look like WCT, in fact, they are 30%, 40% non-WCT? Would that change the way in which you did the threat assessment?
It very well could, if that data exists.
But you're saying that's not available.
That's not what we have.
All right. And finally, you have a statement in here where you say something along the lines that you presume that a population that morphologically is West cutthroat trout is not a threat, does not pose a threat of hybridization.
Okay.
That is in the absence of, again, to underline this, that's in the absence of other reasons to doubt that assumption.
Yes, and that assumption is part of the threats analysis, sort of the second half
okay.
of the find.
All right, now to the question that we started with and to the question that opposing counsel raised. What do you say to her point about Joint Appendix 966, that there was a population with more than 25% introgressed? What happened to that population with respect to the analysis?
Well, I'm not certain that those 919 stream miles are part of the conservation populations that were actually considered for purposes of the status review. I mean, it's not reflected here in this chart. But I'll assume the worst and assume that it was.
You assume the worst, I had read your briefs to say that it wasn't. That is,
that's my understanding, certainly. If she reads the status review differently, then I mean, I will hear about it in rebuttal. But the approach taken by the service was to reject all of the third category, the sport fish populations, out of hand when considering the status review, because they were known to be highly genetically introgressed. And then you evaluated populations on a population or a specimen basis and determined, does this or does this not meet the scientific definition of less slope cutthroat trout? And you didn't just say, well, you know, despite genetic data showing this fish is 25% introgressed, we'll include it. Because had that happened, had, you know, had they had that genetic data to suggest it was more than 20%, they would likely have rejected it. But that wasn't the scenario that occurred.
You recall what I thought I recalled somewhere in the briefs a description of the number of miles of WCT population, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
Does that, if you look at this chart, does that help you? I mean, the total miles here are 33,557, which seemed a lot larger than the amount of miles you were talking about.
That's right, and that's because it includes those sport fish populations, the
right.
known introgress populations.
So can you add up the miles here to determine which miles are you were counting?
I very well could. I'm looking
But you're slow at addition. Me too, so go ahead. I'll give you a minute. I don't know the answer. This isn't a trick question.
You made it a real question.
My high school freshman could do this in her head, though. So.
Right. Well, the problem is that the numbers in my brief are broken out in different categories than these in the charts. So,
but are they around 3,000 something?
Yeah. Yes, we have the 3,000 number, the 3,500 number, is the stream miles occupied by non-genetically introgressed.
And that's the first part. That's tested
unaltered,
right.
Category 1.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And as that was used for the determination that the species is unthreatened?
It was used for that, yes.
Was that the principle?
Those weren't the only fish considered for the determination. Right. So then you have sort of the other conservation populations discussion in our brief at page 12 and 13.
And what do they add up to?
And it says those occupy about 24,000 miles of stream, which would suggest that that's the total, sort of the total remaining here, minus, I'm not sure what.
So what is your answer to her argument that you looked at some that were more than, at least there appear to be 919 miles tested, but more than 25%. What do you do about that?
Do, Your Honor, and I simply don't have the answer as to
know.
What which of the three categories of populations those were part of the status review.
Fair enough.
I'm sorry,
I've used up at least my colleagues for the question.
We can always a lot more time if necessary.
Well,
go ahead with whatever you want to do next.
Thank you. What I'd like to do next is explain the sort of general misconception about the threat of hybridization. It is not the case that in the district court, the American Wildlands threatened or challenged the threats analysis at all, which the district court sort of explicitly announces it, appendix page 23. Here today, opposing counsel says, oh, yes, we did challenge the threats analysis. So presumably the only basis on which that challenge came was what the one described in the reply brief, where they say you can't accept some hybrids as members of the subspecies and also say that hybridization is a threat. But that is not a paradox. That the threat of hybridization is as follows. If you have a genetically pure WCT and a genetically introduced WCT, and they breed and produce a progeny, and that progeny does not meet the standard scientific definition of WCT, it has some other characteristic, that is the threat that hybridization poses that the service is attempting to prevent. The threat is not the presence of any genetic material at any level from another taxa. The threat is the change in the genetic identity of the subspecies. And that is what the threats analysis in the finding, which talks at length about why it is that hybridization risk is not so much that endangered or threatened status is warranted, and conclusions which they never challenge. That's why it is that you don't have a situation where you can have members of the subspecies being as much as 20% introgressed and not producing progeny which do not conform to the accepted scientific definition of the subspecies. It's not threatening the genetic identity of the subspecies. I mean, it's a somewhat simple conception, but I think the terms hybridization being used to describe so many things led to a lot of the lack of direct conflict in the briefs. That's what the service is attempting to accomplish in the finding. First, it asks the taxonomic question, do these fish, based on all the data we have, genetic, morphological, behavioral, et cetera, do they or do they not comply with the standard scientific definition of WCT? And once it's identified which fish do and which populations do, then, and only then, do you assess whether they are threatened, and they're threatened by many things, habitat degradation, whirling disease is discussed at length in the finding, and also this concern that because there is the presence of genetic introgression, are they going to start to produce offspring which don't have the characteristics of WCT, or are we going to start to lose the genetic identity of that particular subspecies? And the service decided no for a variety of reasons outlined in the finding. There are physical barriers preventing further invasion from non-native species. They're able to coexist with red band trout in Idaho, which don't appear to produce introgression, what have you. The only piece of evidence they ever put forth that suggests otherwise, it suggests that there is some harm from the level of genetic introgression that the service considered as part of the subspecies, is this student thesis by Mr. Hitt, about which there's been much debate in the briefs. And there, I think, actually, the briefs do sort of meet head-on. Mr. Hitt produces a study which studied the presence of levels of genetic introgression at various points in the Flathead River, which is one of the many areas considered by the service. And he said, well, look, in these areas, there are higher levels of genetic introgression than you would presume, because we have presumed a certain level of migration by genetically pure West Slope cutthroat trout. And he says, it's very consistent with my thesis that these fish are behaving differently. But that's not to say that it proves these fish are behaving differently by any means. And he acknowledges in the end of his thesis, on a page we cite in our brief, this is the kind of thing we should be researching. We should look into whether my conclusion is the correct one. And the service's scientists, after reviewing the thesis, the service's conclusions are also in the record, it equally is consistent with other theses, one of which is that rainbow trout were stocked in those areas for many years. They established stable native populations. And these are fish which are naturally sympatric, which means that they co-occur in the streams, and they sometimes interbreed naturally, have interbred naturally for thousands of years, and they've continued to do that. It's pretty much what we'd expect to see in that situation. But it doesn't mean that we have any proof that a genetically introgressed West Slope cutthroat trout behaves any differently than a purebred West Slope.
I realize this is not a critical question, but in a sense it has some relevance. At the time of Lewis and Clark's discovery, were there rainbow trout in the territory of the WCT?
Yes, there were in the Columbia River drainage. I don't think
not only stocked rainbow that were a potential hybridizer, but also rainbow that naturally occurred.
That's right. What I don't know is at the point where Lewis and Clark actually observed the West Slope cutthroat trout.
Within the
I don't know if there was rainbow trout there, but over the historic range of the West Slope cutthroat trout, definitely they've coexisted with rainbow trout long before there were any anthropogenic influences.
I suppose we should all be glad Judge Randolph's not on the panel, or he would be asking about the fishing characteristics of the different streams.
Well, I have a fishing question actually raised by Judge Santel's earlier standing questions. Are WCT catch and release sometimes also?
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor.
That would raise the next question on catch and release. What's the survival rate of the release trout?
Right.
You don't know that either?
I don't know that either. No.
If it were marked as threatened or even endangered, can you catch and release?
I believe there.
I assume you can because you never know who you're going to catch. I'm saying which you're going to catch.
I believe the answer to that is no if it's endangered and possibly
after,
if it's threatened.
Definition of take includes attempts to take. So you might accidentally catch a WCT, but you would be in violation if you went out there trying to take a WCT.
Exactly, okay. Yes. Which raises, well, let me make sure I've addressed what happened in the previous presentation, just so there's any confusion. I guess a lot of the underlying assumption of opposing counsel's argument for you today was that sort of the reverse of what happened, that, and it's in the reply brief too and in the opening brief, that the agency just assumed if it meets all of the accepted characteristics of a WCT, it assumed that it was less than 20% genetically introgressed, which does not accurately describe what the service did. The service evaluated.
You agree that this is not, as sometimes happens in these cases where people make unfair readings, it's not a totally unfair reading of the words in the finding, which include, you say, assumed. Your finding says presumed.
That's right. It's not an unfair reading.
But it's not your reading.
But it is not our reading, and it also does not describe what occurred during the status review. And so I just want to lay that out there. Unless the court has any further questions for me.
Seeing none, we'll hear from the appellant in rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
How much time does she have for rebuttal?
2 minutes remaining.
Okay, you have 2 minutes, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just first wanted to address this math question. There were 24,450 stream miles of conservation populations. If you look at appendix page 966, you put together the suspected unaltered and the genetically pure, you get around 12,600. To get to the other 12,000, you have to take in suspected altered at most. We don't know what the genetic composition of those are, and you very well might be taking...
I'm sorry, it says suspected unaltered. Is there a column that's...
The suspected unaltered is 9,107.
Right.
And then the...
referred to 24,000 plus...
Exactly, exactly. So
take the total on page 966 of 33,000 and subtract the 9,107, you get a figure approximating the figure they use.
Your Honor, that would be the suspected unaltered, though.
Suspected unaltered, yeah.
Right, so if you remove the 919, which is the tested more than 25%.
It doesn't make much difference at all.
It would make little sense, I think, to not count the suspected genetically pure ones in the conservation.
Do you have anything better than what we're doing here? Is there another way to evaluate?
I would say one thing. The point is we don't know what the genetic status is of these conservation populations. And if you look at the appendix on 1003, it gives the definition of conservation populations. There's no genetic criteria in that definition. And in fact, it's explicit that genetically pure populations or even populations that are over 10% can be considered as conservation populations.
Let me ask you this question.
Yes.
Sometimes plaintiffs come to court thinking they need a legal victory and sometimes learn from what their opposing counsel says. They already have the victory that they sought. Now, in this case, your opposing counsel says the government's reading of the finding is different than your own reading, which I assume you prefer the government's current reading to your own. If we were to say that because it's the government's reading of its own finding, that's our reading as well, and if the government ever changes that finding, at that point, it would be ripe for you to attack again, and you've heard what their reading is. Do you have any further problems? I understand there's this debate about what actually happened on this one chart, but other than that, do you have a problem with the way in which the government has now put its understanding of the finding?
Yes, Your Honor. The problem with hybridization is that it's a progressive threat. It takes generations of fish. From a first intercross, you have to have back crossing over generations, over perhaps 50 years, to get to a point where a population is 50% hybridized. So what we're worried about is this process is taking place on the ground right now, and that by...
No, in the water.
Excuse me?
It's not taking place on the ground.
In the water, you're absolutely right. Excuse me. And that by putting off consideration of hybridization until you can see the threat, you're putting off...
That's not what the government says it's doing. It's until it has genetic data from which it can see the threat. Now, if you want to go out and get that genetic data, you can. If somebody else wants to go out and get that genetic data, they can. We have two precedents which say the only person we can't force to do that is the government. So why not... What is the... You don't want to presume. You've told you said the government is being terrible when they argue that your argument is that no introgression is allowed. Given that circumstance, where you agree that no introgression is not the standard, where they agree that 20% or lower is the standard, what do you want us to do? Say somewhere in between that, and we don't know what that percentage is right now, or?
Well, the only thing that I can offer now, without understanding precisely what the government did, is that 20% introgression is not supported in the science as a safe level of hybridization. And counsel testified today that
Other than the HIT data, is there anything in the record to support that statement?
Yes, there's the science in the record that has underlined this whole status review on hybridization is that hybridization is per se a threat. And if you've lost 20% of your genes as a fish, we don't have any security that you have the genetic
what's
makeup
the right
to survive
percent?
Into the...
You told us that...
What's that?
What is the right percent?
We don't know what the right percent is.
Well, we don't know, what do you want us to tell the government they have to do at the risk of being arbitrary, otherwise being arbitrary and capricious?
Well, I think 20% is a gamble. Even the states rely on 10%.
You conceded 5% or seemed to earlier. So what is the right number? Is 5% the right number?
Your Honor, I don't have the right number, and I don't know what it is. The fundamental concern that my clients have is that in the absence of information,
given
we're taking...
The right, given the standard of review, if you can't have, you can't come up with the right number, what is it we're supposed to be requiring the government to do to give us a number that we can say is not arbitrary and capricious?
Your Honor, I don't think this case requires the court or plaintiffs to produce the right number. What we are challenging is the approach that the government has taken. And I do think if you read the hybrids policy closely, which I know that you have, is that you end up in a situation where under this policy, listing is never going to be found appropriate for the species unless there are fish that no longer look like West Slope cutthroat trout.
But that's not, as I said before, that is a possible reading, but it's not the government's reading of its own work. The government's reading of its own work, and I assume that whatever opinion we write will say that, and therefore you have at least that much in your pocket, that if the if there is genetic data showing more than 20%, it will be a different ballgame. And unless you can give us, unless there's some evidence in the record, and since this wasn't really argued either before us or below or apparently even before the agency, it's a little hard to point to anything. I don't see what the argument is for the government's current interpretation of what it actually did being arbitrary and capricious.
Your Honor, 20% is a level that when my clients went to every scientist they knew, it was a level that no one had ever heard of, and it was very surprising within the fisheries community. And this case
is that in the record? If that's in the record, then you have something.
I believe it is in the letters from the scientists who the Fish and Wildlife Service had hired to do the report on hybridization.
These are the letters outside the record, right?
Yes, they are.
And that's all?
Well, there was nothing that we could only respond to the decision once it came out. There was no indication that 20% was a level that would ever be considered. In the record, and we've cited to it in our briefing, and I can certainly submit supplemental briefing in this regard, that any level of introgression is considered to be a threat. But when you get to 20%, that's different than 1%. It's a difference in kind, and it's a difference in kind from the 10% that the states have relied on for the last 10 years.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, this case is submitted. Hold on a minute.